Tales from Nun's Bottom, Episode 4, Dangerous Women. It was another day at Ansell's, another day like yesterday. Like yesterday, it was going to start at 8:30, and it was going to finish at 4:30, and in between, nothing was going to happen. Well, not exactly nothing, because business would be conducted, orders taken, goods dispatched, invoices printed and posted, and with any luck, monies received. But nothing apart from that. The luck, though, would be Tony Ansell's alone. He had had the discussion with them many times. In fact, each time they complained about their wages. He took the risks, and sometimes profits were good and sometimes they weren't. But the risk was his alone, and therefore the profits were his alone. They, the workers, took no risk at all. They came to work and got paid for their time and effort. The company could be losing money and they would still get paid. That, if they liked, was their luck. They said they understood and went away, grumbling a bit less than before, but Tony Ansell knew they didn't really understand. He knew, frankly, they didn't have the intellect to understand, which was why the same argument came up with such monotonous regularity. And every time they complained, he sighed, looked up to heaven and tried to explain it again. He talked about profit and loss and things like that, and they listened and nodded, but he could see from the look in their eyes they were feigning it. There was one advantage he had. They didn't want to admit they didn't understand about how business worked. In fact, they didn't want to admit the reason he was the boss and they were the workers was because they didn't understand. Tony liked to think he ran Ansell's Motor Spares as a family business, that his staff were like his children, to be looked after, encouraged, admonished when necessary, and that he, as their paterfamilias, was there for them no matter what problems they had. He told them all of that quite regularly. The staff, on the other hand, knew that was a load of cobblers. They knew that Tony was a fat cat, that they thought owning any business made you a fat cat, and that Ansell's, a small business in a lock-up unit in a provincial trading estate, was rampant capitalism. They knew that Tony might be very chummy with them, and they might be all on first-name terms, but when push came to shove, there was no doubting who the boss was. Tony thought that knowing who the boss was a perfectly natural thing and was to be encouraged. So you could say that Tony and his staff, although they didn't know it, were in complete agreement. And really they didn't know it. There were frequent ructions, so frequent that Tony sometimes thought his staff were a feckless lot who didn't know when they were onto a good thing. In fairness, the staff at Ansell's could not be said to be on to a good thing because the work was tedious, the pay was poor, and the conditions were pretty basic. The premises comprised a front trade counter, a warehouse, an office which Tony shared with one accounts clerk, a kitchen, which was only called the kitchen because that's where the kettle was, and a toilet, which should have been two toilets because the law required separate facilities for male and female staff, but there was more or less only one female employee, the aforementioned accounts clerk, Julie Carmody. There was Pat too, Pat Amos, but she did deliveries, and the way the business ran with stuff going out all the time, Pat was hardly ever there. Tony thought a toilet for Julie's own exclusive use would have been an unreasonable luxury, whether as a joke or because he imagined in some way it satisfied the regulations. Tony bought male and female toilet signs, glued them back to back and hung the result on the toilet door as if it was going to mean there were in fact two toilets. When Julie went in there, she made a point of turning the sign round to female. But since no one else bothered, even Tony after a while, a visiting inspector of whatever it is that such people inspect would have taken it for a female toilet. The lock on the door had broken long ago, and as often as Julie asked Tony to fix it, he promised to do so and forgot about it 2 seconds later. So she took to keeping the mop in there, and whenever she went in, she propped it against the door to stop anyone surprising her. But none of the men bothered to do the same, which meant that while her own privacy was ensured, theirs wasn't. And since they weren't bothered about such niceties, it was still Julie who was embarrassed each time she forgot to knock before entering. That's what Ansell's was like. In those days, it wasn't a lot different from a lot of places. But nowadays, what with most people working in nice clean offices and shops, it would seem a bit primitive. Julie was engaged, most of the time, to a young man called Tim Latimer, who was a guard on the railways. His job naturally took him away rather a lot, what with his usual routes being between London and North Wales, Holyhead in particular. So when I say she was engaged most of the time, it was this being away that was the problem. She and Tim had a kind of on-off relationship, depending on how faithful he was being at the time. In fact, unbeknown to Julie, Tim was faithful all the time. It was just that she didn't trust him because, after all, he had plenty of opportunity, didn't he? She first broke off their engagement after a spectacular row when Tim was held up due to snow between Holyhead and Crewe. He explained. He showed her the weather report. But no, for some reason, Julie was determined that there was another reason. Tim got frustrated, then he got angry, then he stormed out. Julie wasn't the sort of woman to let anyone else have the last word, so she broke off the engagement. She didn't mean to, it just kind of happened, and once she had said the words, she didn't feel she could take them back. On that occasion, things were patched up pretty quickly, and everyone at Ansell's knew because Julie was in a good mood again. That lasted until the next summer, at which point Tim was starting to talk about dates for the wedding. No one knows what did it that time, but she broke it off again, and everyone at Ansell's knew because she went around sulking and being rude and sullen, and everyone was afraid to go into the office and ask her for anything, even their wages. Tony himself suddenly found he had important business out of town and vanished until the next day. It was only a week or so later, though, that the staff came in and found Julie wreathed in smiles, and they knew it was on again. Bill made some crude comment about Tim giving her a good seeing to and about time, silly cow, but I won't repeat here the precise words he used. The men were in the habit of making sexist remarks about Julie, partly because they were all men and men in an all-male environment are like that, and partly because, frankly, Julie was quite attractive in a blousy sort of way, and if you like blousy women, well, she was a sort of woman who might make you think like that, if you know what I mean. It was on the next occasion that Julie's engagement to Tim was off, this time because of something he was supposed to have said that, but didn't, that things went seriously wrong. What it was she imagined he had said, Tim didn't know. He said he didn't know, and she said if he didn't know, she was sure she wasn't going to tell him, and then he said, well, if she wasn't going to tell him, how the hell was he supposed to guess? And she said if he was going to swear at her, he should watch out for the consequences. So he said, what consequences? Which was a mistake. And she said, he shouldn't push her. And he said, what the hell? That word again. Was she talking about? And she burst into tears, at which point he panicked and left the house with the ring in his pocket, still warm from her finger, but growing colder rapidly. That was on the Saturday night, and by Monday morning, Julie had started to calm down a little, but unfortunately, Bill made some stupid comment like, did she have a good weekend, wink wink, and she blew up. She stormed about the place, scaring all the men, and finally Tony decided enough was enough and took her into the office and locked the door, which he didn't need to do because no one was going to come in until it was safe. It was then that she broke down in tears, and at the same time, Tony noticed the space on her finger where the ring used to be. He did his you can talk to me, we're all one family thing, and for once Julie took him at his word and told him everything. Well, not everything exactly, because that would have meant admitting Tim was right and she was wrong, so she told her boss a version of everything. Naturally, despite his avuncular pretensions, Tony hadn't a clue what to say to Julie and immediately regretted offering to listen to her woes. Julie went on to tell him rather more than he wanted to know, and he began to feel uncomfortable in his seat and started to wonder how he could get her to stop talking without looking like he didn't care, or to be more precise, without it showing he didn't care. In the end, though, she exhausted herself, and he suggested she make them both a nice cup of tea, and no sooner had she brought him his cup and sat down at her own desk than the phone rang, and it was a customer with a complaint, which normally he would have let her deal with, but on this occasion he said without hesitation that he would come over and see them straight away to sort it out, which surprised them because this was a kind of service Ansell's didn't normally provide. Leaving the office so precipitously got Tony out of the problem, but it turned out to be a bad move because it created a much bigger one. A week earlier, he had taken on a young lad in the warehouse called Frank Broadbent. Now, Frank was to his girlfriend what Julie had always suspected, wrongly, that Tim was to her. Unreliable, shall we say. Frank noticed Julie within half an hour of starting the job on Monday morning, and from that moment he was, to put it crudely, like a dog sniffing round a bitch on heat. All it needed was for Julie to have one of her rows with Tim, and the two of them were likely to collide with disastrous results. It was after the lunch break and everyone was back at work when Tony returned. Julie wasn't in the office. He didn't think anything of it, but after another 10 minutes or so he did. So he went into the warehouse and asked Bill if he had seen her, and he said no, and this was repeated with each member of staff until it was clear that Julie was missing. Then it occurred to Tony that although it had been a long time, she could be in the toilet, but then he thought, no, it was too long. And then he had a slightly panicky thought of Julie locking herself in the toilet and committing suicide. A quite irrational thought, but then Tony was prone to those. The toilet was off the little room they called the kitchen, and before he even got that far, Tony could hear them. It was the kind of sound you never actually hear because it's an activity normally conducted in the privacy of the bedroom, but Tony knew what it was immediately, even in these unlikely surroundings. He was, after all, a married man. He recognised the sound of Julie's voice, although she was saying things he hadn't heard her say before. In fact, he hadn't heard any woman say things like that, his own wife being the silent type in that situation. The man's voice he couldn't place, though. He wasn't at all sure what he was supposed to do. Was it a disciplinary offence? Ansell's didn't have a rule about such a thing, understandably. So could Julie argue that there was nothing against it? On the other hand, she was doing it in his time. On the other hand, she was generous enough with her own time when he needed her to stay a little late, so he could hardly complain. He didn't want to stand there and listen. He found himself deeply embarrassed and decided to retreat. He went through to the trade counter, and there he was accosted by Jack Finch, the supervisor. The new lad, Frank, was missing. So that was who. He was faced with a choice. He could tell Jack that Frank was in the toilet having it off with Julie, or he could feign ignorance. Tony computed the consequences of both options in about 1 second and chose the latter. His concern now was to stop anyone trying to get into the toilet and causing unnecessary embarrassment to all concerned. When he got back, though, he was too late. Bill was standing at the toilet door with its female sign, knocking loudly. He called Julie's name several times and waited, but each time there was only silence. Tony stood there and pictured the scene inside, the two of them trying not to breathe. Bill said the broom must have fallen and jammed against the door. He would have to get the stepladder and climb over. A part of Tony's brain took momentary delight in the scene that would greet Bill if he did that, but in the end he decided to save Julie. She was a silly cow, but still he had a soft spot for her. Bill was obviously worried that Julie must be slumped in the toilet unconscious, otherwise why wasn't she answering? They kept a short stepladder in the cleaning cupboard, and Tony said he would get that while Bill fetched the first aid kit from the office, just in case. This gave Tony about 30 seconds. The moment Bill was gone, he said in a loud stage whisper that he was just off to get the ladder. It wouldn't take long, and walked as heavily as he could through the kitchen. As Bill returned with the first aid kit, he played for time and asked him to help get the ladder out. It must have got stuck. And by the time they had it out, Frank appeared, as if from nowhere, and asked if he could help. Bill said no, he should get back to work, and he said okay then, and did so. Tony avoided looking at him. When they finally got back to the toilet with the ladder and the first aid kit, the door was open and Julie was in the kitchen putting the kettle on, whistling. Tony thought the whistling was unnecessary. Tony asked her if she was all right, and without turning round she said yes, of course, why shouldn't she be, and did he want a cup of tea? Julie carried on that afternoon as if nothing had happened, and after a while Tony began to wonder if anything had happened, or if he had imagined it. Julie went round whistling for most of the afternoon, which eventually started to grate on his nerves. He started to think she was doing it deliberately, to challenge him, as if she was saying, OK, you know, and I know, so what are you going to do about it? The problem was that he was obviously more embarrassed than she was. Well, she was in a good mood, and if Julie was in a good mood, he was as well. He left it a few days and fired Frank, which suited everyone, not excluding Julie, who by now was starting to have doubts about him. Well, if she felt guilty, that was a good thing, because a week later she and Tim announced a date for the wedding. Everyone at Ansell's was invited, and that September the deed was done at the local registry office. It was as the couple turned to face the witnesses that Tony thought, just for a moment, that Julie winked at him. He had just decided it had been a trick of the light when his wife whispered that hadn't Julie just winked at him, and what on earth could she have done that for? He whispered back that she must have imagined it. Why indeed would she do such a thing? And his wife whispered back that no, she didn't think she had imagined it. How could he have missed it? And he whispered back that in any case she should stop whispering, and then someone in front of them turned round and said, would they please stop whispering? Tony whispered sorry just before his wife got a chance to tell them to mind their own business, which from experience he knew she was more than capable of doing. Tony's wife thought Julie was blousy, and she didn't like blousy women, not around her husband anyway. She had said to him more than once, you mark my words, that woman is trouble. And in a way, he was pleased she was jealous, because if she was, it must mean she loved him. But after a while it started to get on his nerves. Instead of jealousy, it sounded like paranoia. At the reception, Tony had more to drink than was wise, if only because, apart from his own staff, he didn't know anyone there, so there wasn't a great deal to interest him. Then he met Julie's mother. If his wife thought the daughter was blousy, the mother should, he thought, come with a health warning. He hadn't seen her in the registry office because she had, of course, been sitting in front of him. He had noticed the hat from behind, a magnificent confection that rivalled the wedding cake, and had thought at the time it was a trifle exaggerated. But now he saw it from the front. Julie's mother was more than a little exaggerated herself, and in fact the hat, if anything, was understated by comparison. Anything less would have been silly. She was wearing a skirt that showed rather more leg than was decent in a woman of her age, whilst making you wonder why you found a woman of her age so attractive. There was a matching jacket that on some women might have been, if not demure, then at least respectable, but Julie's mother had been unable to contain all of what was more than sufficient bosom into it, and it did rather draw the eye. When Julie introduced Tony to her mother, he found himself straining not to talk to her chest. Other men might ogle, but he was made of sterner stuff. It turned out that she was divorced, and for some reason this information served only to make Tony feel even more guilty for talking to her at all, as if talking to a divorced woman who looked like this was some kind of offence, which for a married man it probably was. Anyway, Tony's wife, who had an unerring instinct for this kind of thing, was by his side in a flash, and if her husband had qualms about peering at her cleavage, she didn't, because, except that she didn't peer, she glared, as if to say, oh yes, we all know what kind of woman dresses like that. Julie's mother turned all her charm on to his wife. She had spent her whole adult life frightening wives. Sometimes she enjoyed it and played on their fears, and sometimes, depending on her mood, she set herself a challenge to see if she could win them over. She knew she could win this woman over, and have her husband as well if she wanted. She engaged Tony's wife in women's conversation, and in no time had her attention and lost Tony's, so he wandered off and left them to it. He decided Julie's mother was best appreciated from afar, and he stood at the bar and did just that, along with several other men, including Julie's new husband. Tony looked at Tim and then at his mother-in-law and wondered for a second, but then he decided that no, that was ridiculous, and put it out of his mind. It seems that Julie's mother, having satisfied herself that her power over men and their wives was still intact, enjoyed the reception and did no more harm. Tony wasn't scheduled to, but was persuaded to make a short impromptu speech. He said some nice things about Julie, what lovely people her family were. At this point, he couldn't stop himself looking in her mother's direction, and what a lucky young man Tim was. There was polite clapping. There was dancing. Tony's skills in this department were unimpressive, and normally his wife was loath to let him make a fool of himself in front of other people. But for some reason, on this occasion, she seemed quite happy to, and he didn't need any encouraging. Yes, all in all, everyone had a good time, and when Julie Latimer, as she was now known, returned from a honeymoon on the Costa Brava a fortnight later, the photographs came out and everyone had a laugh and agreed it had been a good bash. Julie settled down at work and there were no more tantrums, well, not for a while, and Tony decided that, as it turned out, it had all turned out for the best. He gave her a small pay rise on the condition that no one else knew, which wasn't difficult because she did the wages. He did on one occasion ask after her mother, and Julie said, "Thank you for asking, she's fine." But she couldn't resist a small smile, which meant, "Yes, you and every other man." One day, Tony thought, when you and Tim split up, he wasn't optimistic about marriage generally, you'll be a rampant divorcee, and then God help the men of Hampshire.